Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Comunidad Autónoma de Canarias. Pruebas de certificación de nivel intermedio B1 de inglés. Convocatoria ordinaria de 2023. Prueba de comprensión de textos orales. Esta parte consta de 3 tareas. Escuchará cada grabación 2 veces. Escuche y lea las instrucciones al principio de cada tarea y realícela según se indica. Las respuestas escritas a lápiz o en tinta roja no se calificarán. No está permitido el uso del diccionario. El uso de cualquier dispositivo electrónico queda prohibido durante la prueba. El móvil tendrá que permanecer apagado y guardado. Atención, no escriba en los recuadros sombreados. Son espacios reservados para la calificación de las tareas.
Task 1. Listen to 6 extracts about different scientific facts and match each one, 1 to 6, to the phrase A to I that best describes each extract. Write your answers in the table provided. There are 2 phrases that you do not need. Extract 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute to read the phrases. Extract 0. Example.
There's a scientific study that demonstrates that people eat more when they eat with family and friends. The researchers found that, on average, people ate 48% more food when dining with friends and family than when dining alone. It could just be that people eat more because meals tend to last longer when people eat together. The solution is to consume at least as much as others in the group.
Extract 1.
What do you drink when you need to problem solve? A cup of tea? An energy drink? Me, I prefer a simple cappuccino. And when I really need a boost of creativity, I head down to my favorite local coffee shop. Coffee shops are full of other people working. They're reading books, typing emails, making coffee drinks. When you're surrounded by productivity, it becomes easier for you to be productive as well.
Extract 2.
Does money make us happy? Having more and more money doesn't necessarily make you happier. Happiness depends not so much on exactly how much money you have as on how you spend it. For example, good memories tend to give us longer-lasting satisfaction. Spending money on things like travel, going out with friends, and generally having interesting experiences is more likely to raise our happiness.
Extract 3.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to speak more than one language? Would it be hard to talk without mixing up the languages? Let's look at what scientists have to say. They think that using 2 languages provides the brain with plenty of practice. When a person is bilingual, for example, he or she has 2 different languages constantly active in the mind. In order to speak one language without intrusions from the other, the speaker's brain needs to suppress the language that isn't being used.
Extract 4.
Burning fossil fuels releases gases that contribute to global climate change, which creates a variety of serious problems for our global civilization. As one part of the solution, we need to find another way to power vehicles like cars and airplanes. Electric batteries are a promising possibility, but there's a big problem. They're heavy and bulky.
Extract 5.
Plant-based burgers that taste a lot like beef are now popular options at many restaurants and on many supermarket shelves. But what's motivating consumers to try out these new plant proteins? Emotions play an important role in consumers' responses to meat-like foods. A 2021 study out of Penn State found that when Americans are exposed to advertising that appeals to their social conscience, they're more likely to select a plant-based dish than when they're shown ads promoting the dish's health benefits.
Extract 6.
When nobody's looking, you dive into a deep dish pizza or graze on French fries with mayonnaise. It's okay. Everybody does this. An interesting question, though, is why? As recently as 10 or 20,000 years ago, human beings had to fight for food. Under these conditions, a high-calorie meal is a great idea. Early humans needed as much quick energy as they could get every time they ate. The problem now is that we still have the evolutionary inheritance of those days.
Now listen again. Extract 0. Example.
There's a scientific study that demonstrates that people eat more when they eat with family and friends. The researchers found that, on average, people ate 48% more food when dining with friends and family than when dining alone. It could just be that people eat more because meals tend to last longer when people eat together. The solution is to consume at least as much as others in the group.
Extract 1.
What do you drink when you need to problem solve? A cup of tea? An energy drink? Me, I prefer a simple cappuccino. And when I really need a boost of creativity, I head down to my favorite local coffee shop. Coffee shops are full of other people working. They're reading books, typing emails, making coffee drinks. When you're surrounded by productivity, it becomes easier for you to be productive as well.
Extract 2.
Does money make us happy? Having more and more money doesn't necessarily make you happier. Happiness depends not so much on exactly how much money you have as on how you spend it. For example, good memories tend to give us longer-lasting satisfaction. Spending money on things like travel, going out with friends, and generally having interesting experiences is more likely to raise our happiness.
Extract 3.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to speak more than one language? Would it be hard to talk without mixing up the languages? Let's look at what scientists have to say. They think that using two languages provides the brain with plenty of practice. When a person is bilingual, for example, he or she has two different languages constantly active in the mind. In order to speak one language without intrusions from the other, the speaker's brain needs to suppress the language that isn't being used.
Extract 4.
Burning fossil fuels releases gases that contribute to global climate change, which creates a variety of serious problems for our global civilization. As one part of the solution, we need to find another way to power vehicles like cars and airplanes. Electric batteries are a promising possibility, but there's a big problem. They're heavy and bulky.
Extract 5.
Plant-based burgers that taste a lot like beef are now popular options at many restaurants and on many supermarket shelves. But what's motivating consumers to try out these new plant proteins? Emotions play an important role in consumers' responses to meat-like foods. A 2021 study out of Penn State found that when Americans are exposed to advertising that appeals to their social conscience, they're more likely to select a plant-based dish than when they're shown ads promoting the dish's health benefits.
Extract 6.
When nobody's looking, you dive into a deep-dish pizza or graze on French fries with mayonnaise. It's okay. Everybody does this. An interesting question, though, is why? As recently as 10 or 20,000 years ago, human beings had to fight for food. Under these conditions, a high-calorie meal is a great idea. Early humans needed as much quick energy as they could get every time they ate. The problem now is that we still have the evolutionary inheritance of those days.
This is the end of task 1. Now turn to task 2. Task 2. Listen to a person speaking about traveling around French Polynesia. Complete the sentences 1 to 8 with no more than 3 words according to what you hear. Write your answers in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the sentences.
Imagine French Polynesia as the dream destination. It's a beautiful group of islands in the South Pacific. They're known obviously for their beaches, their good weather, their beautiful blue waters. But French Polynesia also has many activities for all kinds of tastes. They have everything for hiking to begin with. Actually, they have some of the greatest hiking in the South Pacific. They're great for scuba divers, snorkelers. If you love the water, they have everything. I mean, they have a kite surfing school. Then there's the option of going on a fishing sunset cruise. So no matter what you're looking for, French Polynesia has it somewhere on one of its islands. The main island is Tahiti. You've all heard of it, I'm sure. The capital of Tahiti is called Papeete. There are a few things to do in Papeete. One of the main attractions is called La Marche. So La Marche is the large downtown central market like you find in the developing world. And so you can go in on the base floor. It opens around 4 o'clock in the morning. And on the base floor, you can find food. They have a whole section where they're selling vegetables, fruits, fruit juices. And then up above on the second floor are mostly boutique style shops. There's also plenty of small restaurants and cafes. And of course, as it's a tropical country, you can sit outside, drink a beer. So my suggestion is just sit down, relax, and watch the world go by. Other things you can do on Tahiti, you can take advantage of excellent hiking in the center. Tahiti in the center of the island is known for its waterfalls and its lush jungles. And that was actually the main purpose of my trip there. I went with a group. There were 8 of us in total, and we went both to Tahiti and to Bora Bora. So my suggestion would be fly into Tahiti, maybe take a little time in the morning at the market, and then fly to Bora Bora in the afternoon. Bora Bora is known for being a pricier destination in the islands, but there are also inexpensive lodgings on Bora Bora. So if you're more of the rustic type, they have Airbnbs that are as cheap as $30, or they have over-the-water bungalows that are 2 stories with hot tubs, jacuzzi for $10,000 a night. So going back to more my price range, the resort I stayed at was called the Hotel Mai Tai, and they had a range of price options and rooms. So the one I stayed at was a regular room. It was up on the hill overlooking the lagoon. It was about $250 per night, so not unreasonable by any means. So there's quite a difference depending on what you want, but they're affordable or at least semi-affordable options depending on your budget.
Now listen again.
Imagine French Polynesia as the dream destination. It's a beautiful group of islands in the South Pacific. They're known obviously for their beaches, their good weather, their beautiful blue waters. But French Polynesia also has many activities for all kinds of tastes. They have everything for hiking to begin with. Actually, they have some of the greatest hiking in the South Pacific. They're great for scuba divers, snorkelers. If you love the water, they have everything. I mean, they have a kite surfing school. Then there's the option of going on a fishing sunset cruise. So no matter what you're looking for, French Polynesia has it somewhere on one of its islands. The main island is Tahiti. You've all heard of it, I'm sure. The capital of Tahiti is called Papeete. There are a few things to do in Papeete. One of the main attractions is called La Marche. So La Marche is the large downtown central market like you find in the developing world. And so you can go in on the base floor. It opens around 4 o'clock in the morning. And on the base floor, you can find food. They have a whole section where they're selling vegetables, fruits, fruit juices. And then up above on the second floor are mostly boutique style shops. There's also plenty of small restaurants and cafes. And of course, as it's a tropical country, you can sit outside, drink a beer. So my suggestion is just sit down, relax, and watch the world go by. Other things you can do on Tahiti, you can take advantage of excellent hiking in the center. Tahiti in the center of the island is known for its waterfalls and its lush jungles. And that was actually the main purpose of my trip there. I went with a group. There were 8 of us in total, and we went both to Tahiti and to Bora Bora. So my suggestion would be fly into Tahiti, maybe take a little time in the morning at the market, and then fly to Bora Bora in the afternoon. Bora Bora is known for being a pricier destination in the islands, but there are also inexpensive lodgings on Bora Bora. So if you're more of the rustic type, They have Airbnbs that are as cheap as $30, or they have over-the-water bungalows that are two stories with hot tubs, jacuzzi for $10,000 a night. So going back to more my price range, the resort I stayed at was called the Hotel Mai Tai, and they had a range of price options and rooms. So the one I stayed at was a regular room. It was up on the hill overlooking the lagoon. It was about $250 per night, so not unreasonable by any means. So there's quite a difference depending on what you want, but they're affordable or at least semi-affordable options depending on your budget.
This is the end of task two. Now turn to task three. Task three. Listen to an interview with a bilingual girl called Leslie. Decide if the sentences 1 to 11 are true or false according to the interview. Write your answers, true or false, in the table provided. Sentence 0 is an example. Now you have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the phrases.
I moved to the UK at the age of 9. Every immigrant has their own story of culture shock, integration, and, perhaps, gradual detachment from their motherland. My own experience has left me fascinated with the role that language plays in that process. In these two episodes, I want to explore the impact of language on identity and how we see the world. Today I'm speaking to Leslie Orozco, who was plucked, Spanishless, from America to Mexico. Leslie, take us back to that time. You were raised in Wisconsin. How old were you when your family moved?
Well, I was born in San Luis Potosí, central Mexico, but we moved to Wisconsin when I was about a year old, and we stayed there until I was around 11, 12 years old, and that's when we moved back to Mexico.
And did you know much Spanish when you moved back?
No, I didn't know anything more than just like, my name is, and thank you, and please.
You would have been in school? Is that secondary school?
Yep, secondary school, the first year of secondary school, actually.
What was that like?
It was interesting, I guess. I was like the new kid, very new kid. and everyone kind of wanted to be my friend, but there was this huge language barrier that I didn't really understand what everyone was saying, and they didn't really understand me.
And did you fall behind in school during that time?
Definitely. In the end, I had to retake that whole first year. And the principal called me in with my mom and said that because of my grades, he technically had to kick me out because I was failing everything except English, of course. So he said that he was only going to spare me because he saw that I was actually trying to make friends and I would assist, you know, after school activities.
How come your parents didn't teach you more Spanish? Did your parents think it was important for you to know Spanish when they moved to America?
Yeah, my dad was the one who was more keen on trying to get us to speak in Spanish. But my mom got a job as a translator and she would like it. Like she would try to speak in English at home because then she could keep practicing and like her pronunciation and stuff like that. So my dad was just kind of always upset about it. And he'd say, like, the day you go to Mexico, you'll see the importance of this. And I'm like, Dad, like, it's been so long. We've never been.
Today, do you speak English? Well, you clearly don't speak English with a Spanish accent, but do you speak Spanish with an English accent or American accent?
I don't really know why. I got really lucky. I just say that I was really blessed. The only kind of theory I have is that it was something that was implanted like in the back of my brain when I was a kid from my parents speaking it around. And my mom always had, you know, like Luis Miguel or Juan Gabriel or like Mexican artists that would sing in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I would sing along with her because it was always something in the background and we would dance. So somewhere I had like the phonetic, but I really don't know when it just clicked.
Do you think that having such a good command of two languages makes you any better at other languages? Because I feel like I want to believe that about myself, but I'm not.
I don't know a third language, but I've tried to learn German and I've tried to learn French. So I was learning German in Spanish, you know, when they have that kind of weird, you know, your teacher speaks Spanish, but she's teaching you grammar of a different language and she's trying to link things. And it was kind of like difficult. But then I would also link things in English. So my notes were like all over the place.
Do you think that overall it has been a good thing?
You know, in its time, it was pretty, you know, it is kind of traumatic, you know, and it molds you in a certain way and you'll hide aspects about yourself. You feel kind of ashamed and then suddenly that shame will turn into something that you're proud of or...
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, Leslie, it's so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much, Cindy. This was awesome.
Now listen again.
I moved to the UK at the age of 9. Every immigrant has their own story of culture shock, integration, and, perhaps, gradual detachment from their motherland. My own experience has left me fascinated with the role that language plays in that process. In these two episodes, I want to explore the impact of language on identity and how we see the world. Today I'm speaking to Leslie Orozco, who was plucked, Spanishless, from America to Mexico. Leslie, take us back to that time. You were raised in Wisconsin. How old were you when your family moved?
Well, I was born in San Luis Potosí, central Mexico, but we moved to Wisconsin when I was about a year old, and we stayed there until I was around 11, 12 years old, and that's when we moved back to Mexico.
And did you know much Spanish when you moved back?
No, I didn't know anything more than just, like, my name is, and thank you, and please.
You would have been in school? Is that secondary school?
Yep, secondary school, the first year of secondary school, actually.
What was that like?
It was interesting, I guess. I was like the new kid, very new kid. and everyone kind of wanted to be my friend, but there was this huge language barrier that I didn't really understand what everyone was saying, and they didn't really understand me.
And did you fall behind in school during that time?
Definitely. In the end, I had to retake that whole first year. And the principal called me in with my mom and said that because of my grades, he technically had to kick me out because I was failing everything except English, of course. So he said that he was only going to spare me because he saw that I was actually trying to make friends and I would assist, you know, after school activities.
How come your parents didn't teach you more Spanish? Did your parents think it was important for you to know Spanish when they moved to America?
Yeah, my dad was the one who was more keen on trying to get us to speak in Spanish. But my mom got a job as a translator and she would like it. Like she would try to speak in English at home because then she could keep practicing and like her pronunciation and stuff like that. So my dad was just kind of always upset about it. And he'd say, like, the day you go to Mexico, like, you'll see the importance of this. And I'm like, Dad, like, it's been so long. We've never been.
Today, do you speak English? Well, you clearly don't speak English with a Spanish accent, but do you speak Spanish with an English accent or American accent?
I don't really know why. I got really lucky. I just say that I was really blessed. The only kind of theory I have is that it was something that was implanted like in the back of my brain when I was a kid from my parents speaking it around. And my mom always had, you know, like Luis Miguel or Juan Gabriel or like Mexican artists that would sing in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I would sing along with her because it was always something in the background and we would dance. So somewhere I had like the phonetic, but I really don't know when it just clicked.
Do you think that having such a good command of two languages makes you any better at other languages? Because I feel like I want to believe that about myself, but I'm not.
I don't know a third language, but I've tried to learn German and I've tried to learn French. So I was learning German in Spanish, you know, when they have that kind of weird, you know, your teacher speaks Spanish, but she's teaching you grammar of a different language and she's trying to link things. And it was kind of like difficult. But then I would also link things in English. So my notes were like all over the place.
Do you think that overall it has been a good thing?
You know, in its time, it was pretty, you know, it is kind of traumatic, you know, and it molds you in a certain way and you'll hide aspects about yourself. You feel kind of ashamed and then suddenly that shame will turn into something that you're proud of or...
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, Leslie, it's so lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much, Cindy. This was awesome.
This is the end of task 3 and the end of the listening test.